This is VOA News. I'm Joe Palca.
This is Joe Palca, a very brave new Canadian. And Rahaf wants Canadians to see that she's arrived at her new home, but she's had a very long and tiring journey.
Canada's foreign minister said Saturday after a young Saudi woman fled to Canada out of fear for her life that Canada believes very strongly that women's rights are human rights. 18-year-old Rehaf Mohammed Alkunin was greeted by the foreign minister Chrystia Freeland as she arrived from Thailand in the Canadian city of Toronto Saturday morning via Seoul, South Korea.
She wanted Canadians to see that she's here, that she's well, and that she's very, very happy. Although she did comment to me about the cold, I told her it does get warmer.
Freeland added that granting asylum to Alkunin is part of a broader Canadian policy of supporting women and girls in Canada and around the world. Sounds of protesters outside the Constitutional Court building in Kinshasa. They are supporters of the Democratic Republic of Congo presidential runner-up, Martin Fayulu, who has challenged the outcome of the country's election in court, claiming he defeated opposition candidate Felix Tshisekedi by a wide margin. Fayulu's opposition coalition said Friday he captured 61% of the vote, citing figures from the Catholic Church, which placed 40,000 election observers across the Central African country. Fayulu called for a manual recount of the election. Palestinians took to the streets on Saturday to march at the funeral of a 44-year-old woman killed by Israeli troops during Gaza border protests yesterday. Gaza medics said the woman, identified as Amal Abu Sultan by Gaza's health ministry on Friday, was shot in the head. This is VOA News. The New York Times is reporting that FBI officials were so alarmed by President Donald Trump's behavior after he fired former FBI Director James Comey that they started investigating whether he was working against American interests. The Times cited anonymous former law enforcement officials and others familiar with the investigation Friday who said counterintelligence investigators looked into whether or not Trump was knowingly working for Russia or had unwittingly fallen under Moscow's influence. Law enforcement officials have previously confirmed that after the firing, the FBI opened an investigation into whether the action constituted obstruction of justice. The U.S. government's partial shutdown entered the history book Saturday on its 22nd day. The partial shutdown became the longest in U.S. history. The shutdown stems from President Donald Trump's demand for billions of dollars to build a wall between the U.S. and Mexico, a move the House of Representatives has refused. Trump on Friday called the situation at the U.S. southern border an invasion, but later said he would not declare a national emergency for now as a way of securing funds for a border wall and ending a partial government shutdown. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says he's confident the United States and Turkey can agree on a way to protect Kurdish rebels in Syria after the American troop withdrawal. Pompeo has spoken to Turkey's foreign minister and says a possible achievement is a work in progress. Pompeo says it can be achieved so as to allow the Turks to defend their country while leaving alone Kurds who do not pose a threat. Now, Turkey considers many of Syria's Kurdish troops to be terrorists and has pledged to attack them. The threats have intensified as the U.S. begins the withdrawal process from Syria on President Donald Trump's orders. Finally, with all the talk of walls and government shutdowns, Broadway sensation Lin-Manuel Miranda was in Puerto Rico last night, bringing his musical masterpiece Hamilton home to raise funds for his countrymen still struggling from the devastation of Hurricane Maria. His first time performing in his homeland in 9 years. He was asked about the U.S. government rechanneling funds specifically designated for Puerto Rico in the event of a national emergency in the U.S.
It's funny, I was backstage tonight, there's a Lion King George sings in a British accent, sounds like, they say the price of my wall's not a price that they're willing to pay. And that hit me for the first, I'd never heard it that way until tonight. I think that's absolutely monstrous.
And this is Joe Palca, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
To do their very best, to get involved in there only for purposes of helping to contribute to the stability of the Congo. Do comment in an ethical manner that does not undermine and exploit the resources of the Congo and promote stability.
The Southern African Development Community, or SADC, calls on Democratic Republic of Congo citizens to remain calm as losing candidates seek legal challenge to the poll's outcome.
You will be in your room and you say you are running for president, and then you will come out tomorrow and tell us you won. It is not possible. That is an autocracy. That is a military regime or strongman regime through the back door. We are in a democracy.
Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari comes under criticisms for allegedly outsourcing his re-election campaign ahead of the February elections.
He warned all who are in the habit of study attitude to war to change that or otherwise begin to look for alternative employment.
And Sierra Leonean President Julius Maada Bio officially ends a two-day retreat for senior government officials Friday. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Democratic Republic of Congo Electoral Commission, or CNE, says President Joseph Kabila's ruling Common Front for Congo Coalition has won 288 of the 500 seats in the National Assembly. The results mean President Kabila's coalition exceeded the 250 seats required for a group to become the majority party in the 500-member National Assembly. Andre Alain Atundu, spokesman for the ruling Common Front for Congo Coalition, says the outcome of the National Assembly election means the winner of the presidential election would have to choose the next prime minister from President Kabila's party.
We did the best result because we have more than 350 for an assembly of 500. So we have a comfortable majority and a plain majority.
In terms of this victory, what does this signify?
In political terms, it means that the elected president has to choose the prime minister among our coalition. And our coalition will form the government. So that's the political meaning of this victory.
Well, we understand some people are particularly not happy with both the presidential and parliamentary result. Some say that a ruling party coalition might have rigged the election. What is your response to that?
No, the ruling coalition didn't organize the elections. If there are some contests, they have to go to the court, as I heard Mr. Fayulu will do. Because if it was the ruling coalition organizing this election, they could come to us and say, we are not happy with you. But no, they are not happy with Sammy. This is not our matter. For us, this result is the real picture of the sociological and national force in the next parliament.
A lot of people said Congolese are displeased with the ruling coalition because the ruling coalition has stayed in power for too long. Are you saying the result of the parliamentary election shows something totally different?
Yes, it shows the reality on the ground. Because you know that the election, the parliamentary election, I can say it's a neighboring election. You choose the person you know instead of choosing the principal for the presidential election. So I don't know. It's quite normal that the one who lose is not happy. This is life. Even in the United States, everyone was not happy with the election of President Trump. But what in the world can I do?
So looking forward, what is next in this democratic process in the DRC, since it seems like it will be the first time since the country gained independence to transfer power from one politically elected leader to the next?
The next step is to determine the date of this transfer of power. And then the elected president will choose prime between the majority coalition, and this majority coalition had to propose to him the members of government. But this is the next story. This is not the problem now. The problem now, just now, is how to organize the transfer of power from Kabila to Tshisekedi.
Andre Alena Tundu is the spokesman for the ruling Common Front for Congo Coalition. He spoke with me from the capital, Kinshasa. The runners-up in Congo's presidential election says he will file a legal challenge to election results that gave the victory to one of his rivals. Meanwhile, in New York, the UN Security Council heard from the National Election Commission, or CNE, and the Catholic Bishops' Conference, CENCO, on the outcome of the December 30 election. VOA's Margaret Bashir has more from the United Nations.
Martin Fayulu told VOA's French to Africa service that he will go to the Constitutional Court on Saturday and demand a manual recount of the vote. The official results put him second behind provisional winner Félix Tshisekedi, the son of a longtime opposition leader. Fayulu said he will use all means at his disposal to recover what he said is the stolen victory of the people, but adds he doesn't have faith in the court. The Catholic Church in Congo and foreign diplomats have questioned the election results. At a UN Security Council meeting on Friday in New York, there was a general call for calm and for candidates with grievances to take them up peacefully with the court. The head of the Election Commission, known as CENI, Corneille Nyanga, told the council from Kinshasa that there are two options: accept the results or nullify the election. He's heard here through an interpreter.
Canceling the election would mean that the institutions in place would be continue to remain in place, because we will not have a president until new elections are organized.
DRC President Joseph Kabila has already remained in office 2 years past the official end of his mandate. He was due to step down this month after 18 years in power once a new president was elected. The representative of the Catholic Bishops' Conference urged CENI to quickly publish the records and minutes from all counting and polling stations so candidates could compare the commission's data with their own, saying such transparency could help dispel doubt about the outcome. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Meanwhile, the Southern African Development Community, or SADC, has called on political parties and other stakeholders in Congo to remain calm as losing candidates seek to challenge the outcome of the disputed elections. The regional body also urged party supporters not to engage in acts of violence. The remarks came after the Independent Electoral Commission, or CNE, declared Félix Tshisekedi as winner of the presidential election, an outcome Martin Fayulu, a joint opposition candidate, sharply disputes. To learn more about the regional bloc's call, I reach Amos Chanda, spokesperson for Zambian President Edgar Lungu, who is the chairperson for the SADC organ on politics, defense and security cooperation.
The call arises out of the anxieties that have attended the electoral process over a long period of time, beginning 2.5 years ago when these elections were due, during the electoral campaign, during the voting, and the long wait before the results were released. So the president understands that tensions have been rising. The president understands that there is a contestation of the provisional result that has been released. Therefore, his call for calm and patience is to ensure that whatever remaining step, if there are any, and in this case they are, because there is a contestation of the provisional result, whatever remaining steps are concluded expeditiously so that the current round of the electoral process can come to an amicable end, and then the country continues to build on the democratic aspirations that are rising. So what he's calling upon is to build on the lessons out of here so that we can have a greater democratic enterprise in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And therefore, all contestations, all disputes must not result in violence.
Some Congolese are expressing concern that some of these armed groups could use the pretext of this supposed contestation to launch attacks. What is the president's call on the Congolese to do in this instance?
And this is the biggest opportunity, perhaps, since 1968 for Congo to start afresh. The president takes a view that there ought to be a broad-based, all-inclusive political dialogue to rein in all elements within the political space of the Democratic Republic of Congo. All people with the current and previous grievances have an opportunity to start from this democratic outcome. Imperfect as it may, but I think that an opportunity does exist. The Electoral Commission must do all it can to instill confidence that the electoral process was credible by making sure that the remaining processes of verification do reflect the pattern of voting and generally the will of the people. This is an important step. SADC, which the president represents, can only help to facilitate a dialogue so that all areas of the Democratic Republic of Congo is neutralized of the negative forces that may want to use a pretext of the concerns and grievances in some political circles to try and cause insecurity and attack civilian populations. It's a wish of SADC, and this is why the president has been very, very displeased at the intention of big global powers like the United States to attempt to scale down their contribution to MONUSCO, the UN peacekeeping mission in the Congo.
Is there a chance that the president will soon meet these political leaders in Congo with the effort to try to ease the tension that could be brewing because of the election dispute?
That is an inescapable responsibility for the chairperson of the organ on politics, defense and security, that whenever there are those differences within the collective efforts and aspiration and principles enshrined in the SADC charter, the head of the Troika will always be ready and available. The president himself, President Lungu, has always been engaged in the DRC peace process long before he assumed this position, because it is in the strategic interest of Zambia, which shares 2,000-man border with the Congo, that the instability there is kept at a bare minimum, if not at all completely absent. That the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo is safe, therefore we do not expect refugees. As you know, we have in the last 1 year about 20,000 refugees crossing into the north of the country. So the president is ready, willing and able to go within the auspices of SADC to try and get the peace process going in the areas which are still flash points for tensions and clashes among different labor groups. But that includes now the broader call to the African Union, the United Nations and other individual countries that have interest and that have security concerns by virtue of their geopolitical positioning within the precincts of the Democratic Republic of Congo, to do their very best to get involved in there only for purposes of helping to contribute to the stability of the Congo. Do commerce in an ethical manner that does not undermine and exploit the resources of the Congo and promote instability.
Amos Chanda is the spokesperson for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. The Coalition of United Political Parties, or CUPP, has condemned Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari for outsourcing his re-election campaign. The CUPP also accused the ruling All Progressive Congress, or APC, of plotting to rig the February general election, and accusations the ruling party reject. The pronouncement came after local media reported that President Buhari gave the ruling APC national leader, Asiwaju Bola Tinubu, full leadership control of the party's presidential and re-election campaigns, while President Buhari takes the back seat. To learn more about the controversy, I read Chudi Chukwani, an economist and political analyst based in the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
Everybody is stunned. Everybody is shocked. Nobody can understand that, because Tinubu is not the one running for president. The president that is running for president is General Muhammadu Buhari. People expect to see the president campaigning and seeking for their vote. I don't know how you can outsource presidency. I can just imagine in America, somebody is running for president and the president outsources the presidency to his the chairman of his campaign organization, and that he will not campaign. He will just be working in his office, and that other people should go and campaign on his behalf. I think it would be absurd, you know. So this is absolutely absurd. That is the only way to describe it. He has never been. That is not democracy.
He said he will be involved in it, just that he doesn't want the Nigerian state or Nigeria to suffer, and that is why, although he will be involved in the campaign.
I don't understand. What is the meaning of that? What does that mean? It's either he's running for campaign to be re-elected into office, or he will say, I am no longer running for campaign. After I finish serving the Nigerian state, I will go back. The whole essence of democracy is that we have this 4-year presidential ritual and everybody should be prepared for it. If you want a second term, these are the things that you need to do in order to get a second term. If you do not want a second term, you will just finish out your tenure. Somebody else will be out there campaigning to come and replace you. It's as simple as that. I don't know why they are reinventing democracy. Why would democratic process be different in Nigeria than anywhere else in the world?
Well, the coalition of united political parties asked President Buhari not to outsource his campaign to the prominent APC leader Bola Tinubu if he's fit for the nation's top job. Do you think health has anything to do with it, and is their criticisms fair?
I believe it is subject to speculation now, because if you remember, in the last U.S. Presidential election, health came up. We had Donald Trump had to go and do a physical, and he was challenging Hillary Clinton that Hillary Clinton is not physically fit. So Nigerian people have to know that you are physically fit, you know, to run the country. And that is why you have to subject yourself to the rigors of the campaign. You cannot outsource that rigor of campaign to another individual and then come and present to Nigeria that you are physically fit, you know, to be president.
So do you think going on the campaign trail and interacting with Nigerian or prospective voters is the only sure way of determining his health condition, particularly when, you know, most African leaders rarely tell about the status of their health when they seek to run as president of their respective countries?
It is one of the ways. Those are the anomalies that are in the system in Africa. That's why Africa, year in, year out, keep on turning out bad leaders who are not fit to run their countries. If you look at the one that is playing out in Gabon, obviously that person was not physically fit to be president. That is why the democratic process involves going around, meeting with the electorate, and selling your program. And that is why it is a rigorous campaign, because countries need to be led by physically fit leaders and mentally prepared. That is how you make a good decision. If you are sick every morning, who is making decisions for the country? It is no longer you. It is somebody else.
So what do you make of calls by the CUPP or the Coalition for United Political Parties demanding that President Buhari should also participate in a national televised debate to account for his stewardship for the last 4 years? What do you make of this?
That is completely unacceptable. Can you imagine in the United States presidential debate, Donald Trump abdicates and said, oh, I'm not going to participate in presidential debate. It is my turn. It is scandalous. Nobody will even tolerate that. They won't even allow my turn to appear. The debating platform is for presidential candidates. Somebody that wants to rule a populous nation like Nigeria, 180 million people, should be able to talk to Nigerians. Nigerians should be able to listen and hear him. He should be able to defend his program. He should be able to talk coherently. He should be able to give Nigerians reason why so-and-so action was taken, or why are there so many hungry people in Nigeria today, and what led to Nigeria being now ranked number one poverty in the world. He should be able to defend all those things. So the CUPP are very right. That is the minimum. You cannot say I'm running for president and nobody will hear you. You will not say anything. You will be in your room and you say you are running for president, and then you will come out tomorrow and tell us you won. It is not possible. That is an autocracy. That is a military regime or strongman regime through the back door. We are in a democracy.
Chudi Chukwani is an economist and political analyst. He spoke with me from Abuja. Sierra Leonean President Julius Maada Bio has ended a two-day retreat for cabinet and other senior government officials in the capital of Freetown Friday. The retreat, officials say, aimed to review the government's 8 strategic priority programs and to build a strong, positive, high-performing connection between ministers and civil servants. This, officials say, would help to deliver on the administration's objectives. But critics say the government has yet to keep all of its campaign promises after 2 years in office. To learn more about the retreat, I reach Mohamed Orado Soare, the Sierra Leonean Information Minister.
Well, His Excellency President Bio has always been concerned about public service delivery. That is why you could note that on assumption of power, the first set of people he met with were permanent secretaries. He impressed on them that they are the vehicle that he relies on to be able to deliver public services for Sierra Leoneans. So this retreat was the second such that he has organized since he assumed the presidency of our country. Last time we met at Toke to prioritize, particularly from his address to the parliament a couple of months ago. This retreat focused on coordination, partnership, collaboration, and delivering for public good.
What is the significance of this retreat? What are the takeaways, and what should Sierra Leoneans be looking up to with this retreat?
Well, this retreat had a couple of critical objectives, one of them being to promote a sense of collaboration and cooperation between political heads of ministries and the public servants, the permanent bureaucracy. During work sessions, there were extensive discussions around building good congruence, working together for delivery, especially in constrained environments like ours. So it was very critical, it was important. The president in his address also hinted at, you know, issues like corruption, which have bedeviled the public service for the longest time and prevented effective service delivery. He also reiterated the usual lackadaisical attitude amongst public sector workers and enjoined all to change their attitudes for the greater good of our country. So several key things, issues were discussed during the retreat.
There were reports that the president also wanted to ensure that senior government officials sign a performance contract to ensure that the assignment he is giving them will be carried out without any failures. Tell me about it. And how far will this go?
Well, performance contracts are hallmarks of effective governance arrangements. So the president is keen through the Office of Chief Minister to ensure that every cabinet minister has a basis for appraisal, particularly at the beginning of every year. You agree a set of objectives. For example, in the Ministry of Information, we might say we want to ensure that we complete digital migration by the end of the year, right? We want to upgrade the Sierra Leone Broadcasting Service, for example. So you will be judged, among other things, on the basis of the accomplishment of these goals. But again, I mean, it's a very interesting objective. We will have to sit with the presidency and agree key objectives to be achieved in the course of the year. I mean, during the same conversation, you might talk about issues around challenges in your ministry, issues about resource allocation, and other such challenges that will be binding constraints in the achievement of those objectives, so that you bring it to the notice of the authorities for necessary support. So at the end of the day, they cannot accept any excuses for non-performance. So it's very, very, very important. But more importantly, the president made it clear that he will not shy away from exposing any civil servant when he sees an iota of evidence of corruption, right? He will not only deal with you according to laid down procedures, they will also publicly name and shame you. Already that is ongoing. Those who have paid, from whom public funds have been recovered as a result of corruption, have had their names broadcast on national television and radio ever since the presentation of the 8.4 billion Leone's recovery to the president a couple of weeks ago. So this is work in progress, and the hall was very energized. We were able to speak frankly to each other as participants. The public servants itemized the challenges they had working with successive government ministers. We, on our part, also shared the concerns we had, and we agreed a roadmap on how we can better work together. It was a very, very interesting and important meeting. I'm sure retreats might have happened in the past, but it only focused for the most part on the politicians. This time, we brought all heads of ministries, departments, and agencies together so that we can chart out the way forward towards achieving goal congruence and delivering for our people together.
Well, some Sierra Leoneans say they've heard about ministerial performance contracts in the past, when the previous administration said the administration will be run on a business. But then this new administration came in and said the previous administration engaged in acts of corruption upon which an inquiry has been named. So what would be different from this performance contract under President Julius Maada Bio?
Well, the first difference is that this is the first set of performance contracts that President Bio will be presiding over. And he is reputed for being a no-nonsense person. He has already earned the sobriquet, a talk-and-do president. He is a man of his words. Every commitment he has made during the campaign, he made during his maiden speech to Parliament and during his inauguration have all been kept to the astonishment of many doubting Thomas. So yes, President Bio is firmly on course. He also used the opportunity to inform all that lethargy, laziness, and unpunctuality to work will no longer be accepted. He told all that he had a New Year gift for us, and he will now monitor attendance and regularity at work using digital technology. So he warned all who are in the habit of study attitude to work to change that or otherwise begin to look for alternative employment.
Mohammed Rado Soare is Visceral Union Information Minister. He spoke with me from Freetown. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the Speaker of the Tanzanian Parliament has summoned Professor Musa Assad, the Controller and Auditor General, to appear before the lawmaking body on January 21. Job Ndugai warned that the Controller and Auditor General would be handcuffed and brought to Parliament if he fails to respond to the summons. The parliamentary speaker's directive came after Professor Assad said in an interview that Parliament has been weak in holding the government accountable. This following his report that nearly $7 billion appeared to have not been properly accounted for by the government. To learn more, I read John Malia, leader of legal affairs of the opposition party Chadema.
Recently, the CAG had made remarks when he was in New York, America. He said that the Parliament of Tanzania is weak, that it is not doing its constitutional work. And this is followed by a report that CAG had written after auditing the government funds. And he found out that Tanzania's sharing 15 trillion went missing and there are no explanation. Normally that report is tabled into the Speaker's office so that the Speaker can allow the Parliament to discuss or deliberate the report and come up with its resolution and all that. This amount is very big, Peter. You must understand that Tanzania sharing 15 trillion is equivalent to almost $7 billion US dollar. So when all this happened, the Speaker kept the report. The Parliament had never had a chance to discuss it, despite a number of parliamentarians asking for it to be tabled in the Parliament. It has never been tabled. Now, the CAG was interviewed in America, and he made remarks that this Parliament is weak. Now, the Speaker got mad, got very angry, and he has summoned the CAG to the Special Committee of the Parliament.
Inviting the Auditor General for disciplinary action, some say, flouts the Constitution because the Constitution protects the Auditor General from any political influence or interference. What is your view about this?
Yes, our Constitution provides for immunity in favor of the CAG that cannot be questioned, cannot be summoned, cannot be called by anybody to be responsible. It's only the court that can do that. Now, what the Speaker is doing is contrary to the Constitution. Is completely violating the provision of the Constitution. Number two, even the way he called him via press conference. Normally, this committee sits down, advises the Speaker, and they summon that person, enlightening. Remember, the CAG is a government official, and he's a very senior government official, and has been working in the government throughout, and he cannot be removed even by the president. So we think this is abnormality, and prove that the Speaker is hiding something.
Critics of the government are suggesting that perhaps this could be intimidation and harassment by the Speaker of Parliament. But then some are also wondering, where is the Speaker getting his powers from? Well, as an advisor to parliamentarians, opposition parliamentarians, what is your take on this?
My take on this is very simple. The question of 15 trillion has to be answered by the government. If the Parliament will ask that question, the government has to answer that. Now, it tells that if the Speaker is getting the courage of summoning the CAG, it means there are top leaders of the government empowering the Speaker. This is logical, obvious. And so I personally don't see any offense that the CAG has committed. And even if he had committed an offense, the proper route would be to take him into the court and not into the parliamentary committee.
Some are saying the disciplinary action could be due to the fact that the Controller and Accountant General perhaps might have tarnished the reputation of the Tanzanian Parliament out of the country, which the Speaker of Parliament perhaps find objectionable. Don't you think his action could be due to that?
That's ridiculous, because if he had said the same words in Tanzania, people in America will hear. Nowadays, you say something, as we now are now speaking up to you, I'm in Tanzania, you're in America, everybody is hearing. And the standing order of the parliament does not provide that you can insult the parliament outside the country or can insult it inside the country. If you violated the standing orders, you'll be responsible. But he has not violated any orders. Because at first, the speaker said, this guy is insulting the parliament. Now he's saying he's insulting outside the country. So he's trying to change the goalpost because he has no legitimacy of doing what he's doing against the CAG.
The ruling party supporters are saying that the report by the Auditor General basically is an embarrassment to the government and want to tarnish the reputation of the President John Pemba Magufuli because he is fighting against corruption. What is your take?
If that was the case, which is not, if that was the case, then they would have let that report be discussed in the parliament, where the CCM members are more than the opposition. They'll counter that argument. You understand? It's not the case. That's why they are trying very hard to embarrass and to threaten the CAG. The report shows clearly that money has been squandered or has been spent without proper procedure of the government spending. And that's a question has to be answered in the parliament by the government.
John Malia is the leader of legal affairs of the Tanzanian opposition party, CHADEMA. He spoke with me from Mwanza in northern Tanzania. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. You'll be hearing from One Day Call with Rotate, Waje with I Wish, Tufan with Tere Tere, Vanessa Mdi with Neroge, and Roberto with Amarula.
da 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 da. Oh, I wish, oh, I wish, oh, I wish that I didn't have a heart. In a holy stone filled deep inside, I didn't have a heart. Oh, I wish, oh, I wish, oh, I wish that I didn't have a heart. Now only stone filled deep inside, I didn't have a heart. I wish I didn't have such a naked, breaking heart. And when it comes to love, the sin I need to carry last. So you don't love, and I don't love. So tell me who they love when nobody wanna show. And if I have to tell you all the things I got to say, I know I started talking, you don't wanna walk away. Cause me, I gotta stay, but do you wanna stay? I wish I didn't have it nowhere. Oh, I wish, oh, I wish, oh, I wish that I didn't have a heart.
I didn't have a heart.
Then I only stone filled deep inside. I didn't have a heart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I wish, oh, I wish, oh, I wish that I didn't have a heart. Now only stone filled deep inside. I didn't have a heart. See, I don't know why they say that love is blind. Sometimes it feel like when they kind of press rewind. Yeah, I, yeah. Cause it's the kind of feeling that you can't deny. Today, 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 today. Me hear it and me hear it each and every day. See, I can understand it, why you trip me this way. Why does love have to be this way? Send me your wanna, but we can't wait for you. Your love to make me happy, to make me hate to you. Baby, boo, I pray for you. Not waiting, I could do. Cause this love is hard to me too.
Yeah. je connais tes ennuis, tes soucis, tes faiblesses, tes problèmes. Je connais des problèmes d'ici et là-bas, et partout c'est les mêmes. Allez, ben, quel est allez, allez, oui, quel est allez, ben, quel est allez, allez, oui, quel est da-da-da, oui, quel est allez, allez, oui, quel est ben, quel est
the brotherhood team.
Listen.
La 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 la.
My name is Roberto
Amarula.
Oh, have you seen my
Amarula?
So sweet and fine like
Amarula.
She comes in the morning
Amarula.
Still have her in my night time
Amarula.
Gives me hangover
Amarula.
But I don't care, no
Amarula.
So smooth and clean like
Amarula.
Don't ever touch my
Amarula.
Mmm, Amarula. Fire, fire upon my ruler. You fit in my life, you fit in my head. She don't get drunk easily. She can dance till 5 in the morning. No car, house or money. Can never get to change her mind on me. Yes, I be a sugar daddy. And she don't want nobody but me. You like it when I go crazy. You, I can never leave.
Amarula.
Oh, have you seen my
Amarula?
So sweet and fine like
Amarula.
She comes in the morning
Amarula.
Still have her in my night time
Amarula.
Gives me hangover
Amarula.
But I don't care, no
Amarula.
So smooth and clean like
Amarula.
Don't ever touch my
Amarula.
Oh, 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 Amarula. Let nobody slow you down. Let somebody go crazy. Let somebody go crazy. Things we do, just you and I. Things we say, just you and I. Make the people say you and I don't come from earth, no. Yes, I be a sugar daddy. And she don't want nobody but me. You like it when I go crazy. You, I can never leave. Oh, oh, have you seen my
Amarula?
So sweet and fine like
Amarula.
She comes in the morning
Amarula.
Still have her in my night time
Amarula.
Gives me hangover
Amarula.
But I don't care, no
Amarula.
So smooth and clean like
Amarula.
Don't ever touch my
Amarula.
She don't get drunk easily. She can dance till 5 in the morning. Make the people say you and I don't come from earth, no. Fire, fire upon my road. She can be my controller. Maybe my own ruler. And it is only you, yeah. Yes, I be a sugar daddy. And she don't want nobody but me. You got me going so crazy. I don't want nobody but you.
Amarula.
Oh, have you seen my
Amarula?
So sweet and fine like
Amarula.
She comes in the morning
Amarula.
Still have her in my night time
Amarula.
Gives me hangover
Amarula.
But I don't care, no
Amarula.
So smooth and clean like
Amarula.
Don't ever touch my
Amarula.
Oh, have you seen my
Amarula?
So sweet and fine like
Amarula.
She comes in the morning
Amarula.
Still have her in my night time
Amarula.
Gives me hangover
Amarula.
But I don't care, no
Amarula.
So smooth and clean like
Amarula.
Don't ever touch my
Amarula.
By Scales. But before then, you heard Mas Luli, a love song from Diane Haddad and Khalid. That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Saleh, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Nashon Kale, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the sun never sets without fresh news. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.